from Princeton University and a PhD in Hispanic American Literature from Harvard. In 2013, he received an honorary degree, honorary doctorate, which is DM, doctorate in ministry, I guess that is, from Cornwell College Theological Seminary. And Pastor Miranda is a frequent speaker at conferences and workshops in the USA and throughout Latin America, and hosts a local popular radio program, Dios Habla Hoy, which is heard all over New England. I haven't heard that yet. Would you please help me welcome Dr. Roberto Miranda?
Home to the land of the pilgrims, drawing some similarity between the Latino evangelical coming to America and the role that they have to play here in America this time in our nation's history, and the pilgrims who came, you know, at a time when God, I think, in a very deliberate way, determined that they should come to the new world. Never thought I would find myself years later here in Plymouth delivering a presentation on the pilgrims. So that's really, for me, it has that kind of significance. But let me just, before I begin, and again, the title, the topic that was assigned to me was what immigrants can learn from the pilgrims. I'm going to play with that a little bit, and I'll tell you how and why in a moment. But before I go any further, I want to sort of establish my conservative credentials at the outset. I want to sort of show you that I'm a bona fide conservative, because I want you to take some of the comments that I might make. I don't think they'll be that scandalous to you, but that you take them in the right context. Congregation Lion of Judah, the church that I pastor, is a very conservative congregation by all understandings. In 2004, I was chairman of the effort to defeat the initiative to bring gay marriage to Massachusetts, which I see, by the way, this whole situation right now with sexual fluidity and so on is one of the most dangerous moments, I think, in the whole history of the Christian faith. And so, you know, I firmly believe also regarding immigration, because I will make some comments because I've been aside, you know, this idea of immigration and the Puritans. I firmly believe that this nation needs to strengthen its borders. I'm quite comfortable with continuing to build the wall, to empower ICE, to honor and fully fund the police, all the things that are dear to us conservatives. And I am totally on board. I think we need to be very careful about vetting new immigrants because of the fear of terrorism and so on, and to prevent the flooding of America with masses of desperately undocumented immigrants who are flowing in for understandable reasons, but sometimes in a very uncontrolled fashion. And I think no nation is able to absorb that kind of violent flux without grave danger to its stability. And I think the European nations that allowed that years ago found, to their great chagrin, that it was a dangerous thing to do, that they needed to be much more careful about that. And they've learned some lessons. So, you know, I also believe that every nation has a right to protect its borders, but there's nothing mean-spirited or immoral in deporting individuals that are entering this country illegally, if that is what is required. All other nations do it. Liberal nations like Canada do it, and others as well. So there's nothing inherently... I could go on and on. My point is that if in the course of this presentation you hear me say something that might sound politically unorthodox or even scandalous regarding the immigration issue or the pilgrims, I hope you'll give me the benefit of the doubt, okay? And not shut me off immediately before I have a chance to explain myself fully. I think we live in an America right now where, you know, people are so already prepared to shoot things down that don't fit perfectly their view of the world, that often things will be said, but they don't get through. And so we quickly, reflexively or irreflexively react to things that we hear without fully considering them and giving them the chance to like really penetrate into our consciousness. What I do want to do is I want to reformulate the topic of my presentation as it was assigned to me and as it has been presented in the publicity that you have received. First of all, when you say, you know, what we can learn, what immigrants can learn from the pilgrims, I would just stop at the term immigrants. You know, to speak about immigrants, you know, sort of in a generalized way, is too much of a generalization, I think, for our purposes. The immigrant community in America is too vast and varied. It includes all kinds of nationalities, cultures, worldviews, dispositions, languages, sensibilities, sense of humor, cuisine, on and on and on. It's a vast universe, and we need to be much more specific given the time that we have ahead. I think it would be more profitable to examine the topic, this is how I'm going to formulate it. What significant similarities exist between many Latino immigrants, especially Latino evangelicals? This is where I want to stop for a moment. Latino evangelicals and the pilgrims. What similarities exist between these two populations? And also another question, what important lessons can be learned from observing the nature of Latino immigration in America and the role that this Latino immigration can play in the redemption and the reclaiming of America in this moment of its history? Do Latinos have something to offer? So I'm going to speak about Latino immigrants. We could go on and on, but let me just stay there because I think good scholarship requires focus. We don't have the time, the luxury to explore the entire universe. I believe that Latinos and other conservative immigrant groups are being sent by God, just like the pilgrims, to advance His plans in this moment in history, not just in America, but I think even the world. And I'll develop that a little bit further. And it is up to us to discern this moment. Even these groups themselves may not be fully aware of what God is up to. Just like most of the pilgrims themselves were not fully aware of what they were participating in. They had an inkling. They had a sense. They had a suspicion. And men like Bradford or Winthrop perhaps saw it more clearly. But those farmers and those common people who came on board the Mayflower and then came to the shores of the Cape, I don't think that they understood really what they were living, what prophetic enterprise they were really and truly engaged in. At least not the scope of what they were going to initiate. And as I said, several years ago I wrote this book in Spanish entitled En la Tierra de los Peregrinos, In the Land of the Pilgrims, drawing out precisely these affinities and similarities between the pilgrims and Latino immigrants to America, and particularly Latino evangelicals. And I took my congregation, Congregation Lion of Judah, located in Boston, as an example of a community, Latino community, that was exemplifying some of the things that God is doing right now through Latinos. And I will add here, for a moment, it's not just Latinos. I think it does include Haitians and South Koreans and Africans and Latin Americans, yes, West Indians and other conservative, evangelically oriented immigrant groups that are playing a preservative role in what is happening in America right now. So my task in this presentation is I want to specifically speak about Latino evangelicals and the great potential that they offer to help win the spiritual war for America's soul. As I say, I will refer also to other groups, other immigrant groups as well. I also want to suggest some similarities between Latino evangelicals and the pilgrims who came to America 400 years ago. And finally, I want to point out some lessons that Latino evangelicals and all immigrants can learn from the pilgrims. In that sense, I do want to be obedient to Paul Jaley's assignment to me. One thing that I need to say is Latino evangelicals are extremely diverse, just as the whole Latino, immigrant world as a whole is extremely diverse. So I will concentrate on just the evangelicals and what they have to offer this nation. The Latino evangelical community includes Protestants. It includes Catholic Charismatics. That's important. It's not just Protestants, but Catholic Charismatics share so many things with just regular, quote-unquote, Protestants. They hold similar theological beliefs in many important areas. Again, speaking about the Latino evangelical community. Both communities, Protestants, Catholic Charismatics, are very conservative regarding sanctity of life, human sexuality, a high view of the Bible, views on marriage, love and gratitude toward this nation, a powerful work ethic, respect for the police, respect for government and political authorities, reverence for the church and their spiritual authorities, all of these things that conservatives hold dear. and that characterize conservative evangelicals. Latino evangelicals hew to, they cling to the same kinds of directives. And by the way, don't let their supposed theologically sophisticated spokespeople fool you. These guys and gals do not represent the sentiments often or the outlook of the vast majority of Latino evangelicals, Catholic or Protestant, that attend our churches every Sunday. I often read articles, just like last night I did, written by sophisticated theologians and people who are intellectually adept, saying things that I don't see reflected in my congregation every Sunday or Wednesday night when I attend. Our people, I think, are highly misrepresented many times by those who pretend to speak for us. So I think people who read these articles, because those are the writings that get to the public, do not fully understand the earthiness, if you will, the fundamentalism of our Latino believers. Latino evangelicals constitute an influential sector of the Latino immigrant community in the United States, and they are becoming an increasingly influential sector in America as a whole, as we saw in the last election. Look at the impact that Latinos had in the voting in the 2020 elections. They confounded many experts in voting for Trump in greater amount than anybody suspected, because this is a very interesting segment of American society, and they will become increasingly influential. Do you know that by 2050, the U.S. Census predicts that Latinos will constitute 29% of the American population? Right now, they constitute 18.5%, 61 million, at the very least, because often it's hard to tell how many truly there are. But it is a significant, it will be a significant sector. It's a young sector of the population, dynamic, enterprising, ambitious. They have great food, and you know, it's a very attractive sector of America, and we do well to understand what's going on in that sector of the population. Lion of Judah, the community I pastor, reflects many of the themes of this sector of Latino immigration in America. And as I said before, similar things could be said about sectors and churches of the Korean, the Chinese, Haitian, African, West Indian evangelical communities, among others. They all hold similar views on the topics that I have just mentioned. Interestingly enough, there is also a significant number of undocumented immigrants within these evangelical communities, which is ironic in a way for us, law-abiding, law-respecting citizens. They say, well, how can these people be so conservative, so evangelical, so pious, and they are here illegally? Do you know that reality is always more complex than our schemes? And that people are so much more elusive than we give them the credit for. And that is the reality. And I will speak a little bit more about that. So let me just quickly get into this. Why this idea of so many Latino evangelicals? It's not like it's a huge, huge majority. No, but there's a significant number of undocumented immigrants within the evangelical communities of all these different groups. Chinese, South Korean. It's not just Latinos. Okay? So let me get into some of the similarities. In this respect of a significant number of Latinos who are evangelical, conservative, also being undocumented, there are interesting similarities between these undocumented evangelical immigrants who have been coming to America and the pilgrims. That's where I get a little scandalous. And I start walking on thin ice here. Now listen to this. Even if the pilgrims weren't technically illegal immigrants, it must be admitted that they are at the very least they pushed the envelope a bit. There were rich indigenous cultures in North America when these European immigrants arrived. They had been decimated by the plague, yes, but it was still their land, right here where they arrived. The pilgrims knew they were in the wrong place when they landed. They knew that they were not in the Hudson River in New York. But nevertheless, they had a pressing need. And so they landed here, and they were fully determined to survive, to settle, and to do whatever was necessary to occupy the land and to prosper here. They didn't have the luxury of thinking, are we stepping on gravestones or graveyards or offending the sensibilities of the natives here? They had a need, and they took the opportunity. And by the way, this is why today we have these ceremonies asking forgiveness of the Wampanoag tribe. And how many of those forgiveness ceremonies have I attended over the past 20 years here in New England? You know, we wash at the feet of each other. We pronounce forgiveness on each other. Why? Because there's an understanding that some wrongs were perpetrated by our ancestors, that the rights of native people were violated. And there's a whole rich literature, particularly in the secular world, regarding this whole sort of stream of interpretation. You think of King Philip's War in 1765 because of these violations and the atrocities that were committed by those, you know, at least the ones who continued, the pilgrims, the original pilgrims. And all kinds of stuff was done badly, you know, violations. And the native tribes, once they had sort of recovered from the plague, they reacted to these violations. And they continue to resent that history, which I don't know that it's a good thing to do, but that is the fact. You know, we're not talking about imaginary things. And the pilgrims felt justified because of their Christian identity. And because they felt that God had given them the land from the pagans. Remember that they were channeling Old Testament archetypes. Just as the Israelites felt validated in killing the pagans in Canaan, because God had told them to, and taking their land and inhabiting houses they had not built, and so on and so forth, they were the people of God. They were doing this to pagans who God abhorred in their scheme of things. And you know, I believe, I adhere to that, by the way, because I believe in the literal truth of the Bible. But the pilgrims, they channeled those same archetypes, and so they felt, we are Christians, these people are pagan, we have a right, and we have the blessing of God. But they and their descendants did end up pushing out many Native Americans who legitimately possessed their land. They committed grave injustices and did much violence. As I say, there's a whole academic literature, mostly secular, that discusses this topic in great detail. I think if you've had any kind of academic training, you know that you need to follow the truth where it leads. I see a lot of intellectual shoddiness among evangelicals, among conservative believers these days, and also in the secular world. But, you know, when you are trained academically, you are told, see what you see. You need to critique your own thinking. You need to opt for other possibilities as well, and so on and so forth. Often we don't do that. We're so sold out on one particular truth and so threatened by other truth that may confound our comfortable worldview that we hold back that. We should not do that. This in no way takes away from the merit of these men and women, so courageous, so spiritual, so used of God. But I think we need to get into the complexity of their experience and their life in order to do justice to them and to understand them fully. There's nothing wrong with that. And I believe that intellectual honesty requires that. For me, this only adds texture to their identity. We end up not overly romanticizing them, and we realize that they were human after all. Morally, their immigration to North America and their subsequent actions were quite complex and in areas open to criticism. We must not overly simplify them. We do them an injustice if we reduce their humanity, which includes their sinfulness and the mistakes that they honestly made. In that same way, the immigration narrative to America of many Latino evangelicals is also morally complex. And this is my point here. We must bear in mind these historical parallels in order to be fair and just and to bring to bear the complexity and wisdom that this topic requires. Just as we refuse to oversimplify the experience of those first immigrants, pilgrims, and they were immigrants, so must we also understand the complexity of what many Latino immigrants, and particularly Latino evangelical immigrants, are. We must enter into their drama. I was so blessed by hearing Bradford, the descendant of William Bradford, just now, and his impassioned sort of deconstruction of Bradford's personality. It was so good. It was a literary exercise. And I got to know this man better and to see his pathos. And so I appreciated him much more. We don't do that many times with our heroes. Societies don't like to take their myths and see them in their fullness and to understand their meaning. But we must do that in order to do justice. And by myth, I don't mean something that is false. I mean something that incarnates the aspirations and the emotions of a culture or of a society. And we need to do that with the pilgrims. And we also need to give Latino evangelicals and immigrants, or immigrants of any sort, really, the same kind of benefit of the doubt, the same kind of willingness to enter into their drama. So in this sense, there are some interesting parallels between pilgrims and many pious evangelical immigrants that you yourselves may be able to explore in more detail. I don't have the time to do that on your own later. I just want to point out to these parallels so that you can reflect on them in the future and see it from this perspective. The lessons are not just for immigrants to learn from the pilgrims, but also we learn from immigrants, and the pilgrims are enlightened and seen from a different enriching perspective when we observe the experience of pious Christians like the pilgrims were, and the things that they are living out and working out in this moment in time and space. The fact, for example, that there is often a lot of sinfulness mixed in with historical processes, even when God is leading history toward a certain end. Even when the Spaniards came, for example, to the New World, and the Indians people, the native peoples here were in Latin America, for example, were exploited, cruelly treated, and so on. It's undeniable that God was doing something to weave a further narrative about cultures mixing and Christianity coming to the New World and pagan cultures being inseminated by the gospel and so on and so forth. But there was a huge amount of death and violation and sinfulness and cruelty involved in all of that. This is the God that we serve. It is the God who moves in all kinds of complex ways. And often, in refusing to understand that, we oversimplify this complex God. For me, one of the biggest things that I've dealt with in this past few years or during the 2020 election was, how could I vote for Trump? How could I vote for Donald Trump? You know, how could God ever conceive of the idea that Donald Trump could be used by him? Well, I say we serve a complex God and we serve a sovereign God. And this is not the first time that God uses some unsavory characters to carry out his plans throughout history. And again, it's this refusal that we have to understand the complexity of the human condition and the complexity of the God that we serve, who, when he enters time and space, he is, quote unquote, forced to deal in certain ways out of respect for we who inhabit that dimension that he himself created. And so let's not oversimplify God. Let's not oversimplify historical processes. There are complexities regarding the immigration of the pilgrims into the New World that sometimes we choose to omit and to glide over in our desire to idealize them. But intellectual honesty, again, I will say, requires that we stop to think about these things and that we include them in our analysis. To me, it just makes the pilgrims more human. It makes them more three-dimensional. It makes them more recognizable. Otherwise, what I have is cardboard figures, you know, coiffed and made up in artificial sorts of ways, and I cannot identify with them. I identify with the agony, the angst, the struggle, the contradiction, pain, the sinning, even in the midst of aspiring. That is what we want from our heroes. And we need to engage in that, even in our own time, because that will make us better prepared to understand what is going on right now in America. And some of the people that we choose to lead us as well, that we allow to lead us. It will make us more complex and less open to being shot down by our secular critics who see sometimes our superficiality, and rightfully so, you know, critique us for that. I think, by the way, not to get into a rabbit hole here or rabbit trail, we're living in a very complex world at this moment. 21st century culture, 21st century society is more complex than any other generation that has ever existed in human history. And God has a plan for the church. He wants the church to do something extraordinary. And God is about to do something absolutely mind-blowing. But he requires a church up to the 21st century. Its complexities, its contradictions, its demands. And this generation of secularists out there, I mean, many of them do want to believe. They'll have to believe because they're serving death, and death has a short shelf life. But they need prophets who will speak to them in their language and with the complexity that they require. And I believe that many of my beloved conservative prophets often are not up to the task of speaking truly and honoring the complexity of the kingdom of God. So we need to fight for that complexity in what we do and how we analyze the world and our leaders. So when I see, you know, both the pilgrims in their perilous moment, and I see evangelicals sort of coming into America, you know, sheepishly and ashamed because they're doing it sometimes, you know, illegally. I see this. When people are fragile, when they're hungry, when they're desperate, when they feel that their life is threatened, that their children have no future, they will do whatever is necessary in order to survive. The pilgrims did that. And many of these immigrant groups will do the same thing. But I will add nuance to what I'm saying, please. As I said, don't shut me off until you hear the whole thing. Okay? So the conclusion is both pilgrims and immigrants share some complex threads in their immigration experience. I just want the commonalities, the drama, the common dramas, and how people react in that. Okay? So that's one topic that I'm kind of just, you know, penciling out to you. Here's another theme that I think is important regarding connections between immigrants and Latino evangelical immigrants, or, you know, many minority immigrants and the pilgrims. Even though the pilgrims had a subliminal sense that in migrating to the New World, they were involved in a sublime prophetic enterprise of great proportions, they still did not understand just how profound and how far-reaching their enterprise really was. They knew that they were involved in something unique and sacred. But if you would have asked them that they would be spawning America with all of its great contributions, its evangelistic contributions to the world, its missional complexity, its cultural contributions, its financial power, their mind would have been blown out of their brain. I mean, it was inconceivable. They knew that there was something important. And as I say, maybe somebody like Bradford or Winthrop, because these were exceptional men, understood, had an inkling of what they... And you can see that, for example, in Winthrop's City on a Hill narrative and so on and so forth. I think like all prophets, they understood certain things from afar. They had an inkling, but they didn't even know what they were channeling. They were saying certain things. They didn't know the full import of what they were saying. And so these Puritans, they're coming here, they know that God is up to something, but they don't understand how sublime, how sacred, how amazing the moment that they're living. As I think that we ourselves are not able to understand what we are living right now in the 21st century in America and what God is up to. God is about to do something that will just, blow our minds. And in my better moments, I think that we will see things that no other generation of human beings has ever seen, including the church being used in extraordinary ways, and God manifesting His presence and His power and His intentions in ways that are unprecedented, and miracles that will be done that are of extraordinary proportion. But we are living this moment, and what we're seeing is all these things happening and so on, and all these strands coming together, and we sometimes panic and fear and so on. But God is doing something, because when you're living history, you don't realize it many times. When you're living prophecy, you don't realize it until you look back. And then you write it down, and people say, oh, yes, you know. But you're just writing, you're summarizing something that was so much more textured, more complex, more zigzagging, more difficult to, so difficult to discern what is going on. I think that's what's happening right here. And these pilgrims were living a moment in history where God was about to do something extraordinary and put in a big piece of His puzzle, historical puzzle, but they didn't understand it fully. They were participants. This, what they were doing would impact history, the entire world. I suspect that the majority of these humble farm people and so on did not understand that. Now here's the punchline. In that same way, I believe that the arrival of these committed Latino evangelicals to America, even if sometimes it involves the dubious element of illegal immigration, is part of a greater plan that God has to add new spiritual energy to an America that is right now debating between secularism and a return to its spiritual roots. The very roots that were first established by the pilgrims 400 years ago. This is why I believe that many of these Latino evangelicals and other humble ethnic evangelicals coming to America. And I think also that what is happening all over the world, these huge migrations of people, and I will add, so I don't have the time to get into that, but these Muslim immigrants who love Allah and who are part of the whole sacred thing, I think God wants to do something extraordinary with the Muslim population as well. They are sons of Abraham. And God will do something. It's happening already in places like Iran and so on. God is not through with the Muslims, even though many of us hate them enough to not want them to be saved. Like the prophet in the Old Testament, I don't remember his name. But, what is it?
Jonah.
Yes, Jonah. But, you know, that's how far our complexity needs to go. And God is moving these masses of human beings. Again, he's involved in one of the greatest experiments of social engineering in the history of the world. And it's not an experiment because God never experiments. He's yes and amen. And so he's moving all these pieces, and we need to discern what is going on. We need to ask the Lord to give us prophetic discernment. And so I believe that Latino evangelicals, to speak about my own kind here, they are part of this process where America right now is teetering on the brink of going towards headlong into secularism. And we are almost perfectly divided right now between conservatism, secularists, and conservatives. And we need fresh blood. We need fresh energy. And these masses of conservative ethnic believers can bring new energy into this equation.
Amen.
And we need to understand that in order to, we need to put on hold some of our own ethnic inclinations, our own tribal inclinations, and see things for what they are, see them clearly. In this sense, many of the Latino, the African, the Chinese, the South Korean evangelical immigrants, in that sense, they are direct spiritual descendants of the pilgrims. God may be using them, though through imperfect means, to advance the interests of his kingdom and history, and to help redig the wells first dug by the pilgrims 400 years ago. There's a spirituality, an intensity, a passion, a simplicity, a primitiveness that you find in some of these ethnic communities that America sorely needs. It's too sophisticated for its own self. It is too intellectually decrepit right now. You know, its own intellectualism, its own sophistication is leading it to death. It needs the opposite. Earthy, simple believers who will come with their energy and refresh the wells of our spirituality. Just like the pilgrims, though, Latino evangelicals may not understand fully their mission. See, they're living it. But I don't think they understand that they're a gifted child. And that gifted child needs to be protected by the older. It needs to be welcomed. It needs to be marshaled. It needs to be shepherded in order to find its full destiny. They are involved in an ongoing cosmic drama of social engineering initiated and conducted by God himself in these pregnant moments of human history. So this brings me to a third subject. One is, again, the morally ambiguous, complex nature of pilgrim and Latino evangelical immigrant experience. Two, the fact that sometimes these participants are morally are clueless about the true nature of who they are and what they're living out and how they're being used by God. So a third thing is this. This is a conclusion sort of to the second thing. It's a corollary. This brings me to another subject that is related. Please, this is for you. If conservative white evangelicals could only discern the true nature of this spiritual process that I'm describing here, they would perhaps be better disposed to see the great potential that these conservative evangelical immigrants offer, and to engage in a more intentional effort to offer them, to try to cultivate them, to offer them spiritual direction instead of alienating them and driving them into the hands of the liberals unnecessarily. And this is so important. You see, this is a moment that requires profound prophetic discernment.
Yes.
To go beyond our, you know, instinctive inclinations and to act in the light of the Spirit. And we have an opportunity here that I think we need to look at. By doing so, they could potentially gain millions of allies and potential voters that could tip the scales in favor of the conservative evangelical cause at a time when we sorely need them, given the fact that America right now is almost evenly divided between secularists and conservatives. Behold the elections of 2020. The divisions are so clear. There's not a whole lot of luxury that we can afford. And I'll use an example from my own congregation. Many of the members of Congregation Lion of Judah believe, as I said before, almost all the things that people who voted for Trump believe. If you examine them, they believe practically everything that they. But many of them, in this 2020 elections, were so angry, so terrified and offended by Trump's unfounded Machiavellian insinuations that immigrants are rapists, thieves, and terrorists, that many of them ended voting Democratic. And it's unnecessary. I think, you know, Trump, whom I voted for, as I said, ended shooting himself in the foot so many times. And unnecessarily alienating both many white evangelicals who would have voted for him, but who couldn't bring their conscience. They didn't have enough complexity in their theological schemes to bring themselves to vote for somebody that seems so counterintuitive to the values and the fruit of the Spirit, for example. And so for them, and they ended up, you know, doing what they should not have done because they were scandalized. And because they didn't have the spiritual wherewithal to say, well, I will do it. Because in a binary system, if I don't vote for him, I'll be voting for somebody that is even worse. That's what brought me to vote for Trump. And because I'm not so scandalized by God using strange instruments. But, you know, many Latinos were so angry, so terrified that they'd be thrown out and shipped in the next boat to Latin America, that they decided to vote. I don't recommend that kind of conduct, but that's what they did. And when I tried to convince them that they should vote for Trump, some of them became angry with me and couldn't understand my reasoning. I have a few empty seats in my church to credit for my writing a paper saying why I would vote for Trump and never for Biden. Some people left, and you know, I'm glad in a sense. I'm saddened, but I think that it needed a good moment there of cleansing the church. Churches need to be cleansed every once in a while, by the way. And many pastors are not willing to go through that crucifixion. And so we end up speaking from both sides of our mouths, and that's one of the tragedies of the American church right now. Yes. While Satan is speaking with a very clear voice, we are sort of trying to play to both sides of the choir. We cannot do that. Are there ways in which white evangelicals could encourage these modern day pilgrims and win them over to our side? Are there ways in which we could strengthen our borders, build a wall, establish clear limits against illegal immigration for the future, and still find a way to end the agony of millions of undocumented immigrants who are already here and have American-born children who own homes, own businesses, pay taxes, contribute significantly to the American economy, love this country, and who will probably continue to live here for the rest of their lives anyway? And you know what? Many sectors of American society want them here and need them here, even as they hate their presence. They need them to clean their linen in their hotels. They need them to serve their food and cook their food many times in their restaurants. They need them to pick their berries, to take care of their elderly, to do construction. Have you been to any part of, you know, Somerville or Boston and seen how many of the people who are being used by white contractors are Latino immigrants who are willing to work for much less because they have a hard work ethic, which is the American way? And these people, brothers and sisters, they're not going anywhere. These 28 million, the 60 million, or they're not all, of course, you know, it's about 12 million undocumented immigrants right now. That's sort of, you know, they're, and not just all, by the way, they're not all Latinos. Understand that, by all means. But, you know, right now, for example, I just saw a census analysis that most of the undocumented immigrants who are here have been around for at least 10 years. So the number of years that immigrants, undocumented immigrants are, have been here grows with the passing of time. These individuals, I think realistically speaking, they will not go anywhere. We will not get them out because we need them. Some of the most, the greatest advocates for these illegal immigrants are corporations themselves and many of the companies, the meat packing industry, the vegetable picking industry. They know that these are, they're necessary. And so, you know, it's like, I think sometimes undocumented immigrants are like that neurotic child in a dysfunctional family that keeps the family together because he requires a lot of attention. And we don't want him to be neurotic, but he's necessary to keep the couple together and married. And so some of these undocumented immigrants, many times they offer a kind of suspect identity, but we need them even as we reject them. And we say that we want them out. But it's much more complex than that. Societies, as I say, are much more complicated than that. I'm winding down here. I got about maybe 1 minute, I guess. She's there. You are there. 2 minutes? Are there ways in which we could strengthen our borders, build the wall, establish clear limits against illegal immigration for the future, and still find a way to end the agony of these individuals? I think that this is the perfect moment to put into practice Christian values of grace, forgiveness, and generosity, even as we also apply the law and protect our nation and its borders going forward. It's never either or, people. It's generally it's both and. And I think that there are ways to do that. And we need to ask the Lord for intelligence and wisdom how to do that. I believe that in our simplistic thinking, we may be squandering a precious opportunity to think and act creatively regarding this strategic sector of American society. So I understand the complexity of what I'm navigating here, but I want to issue an invitation for us to be more textured and nuanced than that. There's a couple of things I want to say, but I will leave it there. I hope that if I have done anything is to maybe disturb your innocence a bit, to send you home to Google and have you start looking at some of these elements. The moment that we are living in human history is extraordinary, and it requires extraordinary thinking. It requires magnanimous, generous thinking as well, biblically informed, but also intellectually rich and complex. This is what God is requiring of the church at this moment in American history, and the history, I think, of the entire world. Thank you so much.